Settle down. I'm not in the mood for your crap.
KFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gao Media station.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Glenn Davis here, host of Soccer Matters, reminding you that nothing goes better together than great friends and Bud Lights. Spring is here. Get out on a patio, post up at the pool, or come out to a Dynamo game. But most importantly, grab your friends and an ice-cold bucket of Bud Lights. Whether it's tonight, tomorrow, or any other day of the week, remember, it's not about the parties. It's about the friends you made along the way. Bud Light, official beer of the Houston Dynamo, and a sponsor of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. With that, we bring in former Houston Dynamo defender. Also, you can catch him on the Cube as the color analyst on Dynamo broadcast with moi and also Cindy Bourbano. He's Eddie Robinson. Eddie, thanks for coming on the show.
Anytime, Glenn. Always a pleasure.
All right. You and I had the call of the game on Wednesday, the Dynamo at Philadelphia. Didn't answer the bell to this one. I think you and I were pretty clear about that after 15 minutes. They just seemed short to everything. They couldn't get pressure on the ball. It just seemed that step not quick enough in this one. How does that change on Saturday? Can it change on Saturday against Atlanta United?
Well, I hope it changes. It should change. One adjective I would add to those that you just mentioned was timid. They just certain situations, Kubo Torres looked timid. Romel Kyoto looked timid. They didn't look their normal, just lethal selves. And, you know, I don't know if there are reasons for that, if it's a mentality issue, if it's a physical issue, but I'm pretty sure that after that performance, Wilmer Cabrera will have some strong words for the players, and I think that we should expect to see a bit of a different team come out on Saturday.
Going into Atlanta, this is going to be a huge crowd. Atlanta's 3-4-3 on the year. They're ninth in the East. They're finally getting home. They're going to be jacked to play. They're going to get most of the ball in this game, one would assume, because the style of play they have, Eddie, take us into that and how definitive that is, because I think that's a cool thing in Major League Soccer now, that the teams really are being defined by the way they play, not just the results they get.
Well, they're a little bit different since Joseph Martinez has been injured, and we've seen a lot of Kenwin Jones. Kenwin Jones is an absolute beast, probably maybe the biggest target forward in the league. They like to play through him, combined with him, Yamil Assad, Villalba, Miguel Almiron. They like to combine, make runs off, try to get in behind. But one thing that Atlanta really does and really does well, especially at home, is they get their outside backs forward. And their outside backs, Greg Garza especially, gives them great width. And on a small field, you know, they're playing on a football stadium. And I spent a lot of time playing in a football stadium in San Jose before the team moved to Houston. When you play on a small field, you have to use all the width you can, and you high press. So the Dynamo aren't going to have a lot of time on the ball. And when Atlanta gets the ball, they're going to try to get their outside backs forward to pull central midfielders, the Dynamo, out. Because that's the one thing we know, the way the Dynamo play, the wingers stay high, stay wide. That means always one of the three central midfielders for the Dynamo has to come out when an outside back goes forward. That opens up in this space in the center midfield for Almiron, Villalba, to get on the ball, combine with each other, and find Kenwin Jones. It's a really potent attack. It's fairly similar to the Dynamo, and the way that the Dynamo play is they go for it. And this is a team, Atlanta, who plays similar to Orlando. What we saw with Orlando, getting their outside backs forward, their outside backs don't defend a lot, and the Dynamo ate that up with their counterattack. So it's going to be interesting to see if Atlanta's going to maybe leave one of their defenders back, say, you know, maybe one guy bomb on, one guy stay back, how they deal with that counterattack of the Dynamo.
Now, I'm going to take you back to Kenwin Jones, and I agree with you. Villalba, Almiron, these are all young players from South America. Almiron's from Paraguay, played at Lanús, Cerro Porteño. Villalba played at San Lorenzo, again, 22. So they've gone young, they've gone South American. They're mobile, movement, as you mentioned, like to get their outside backs forward. But I think Kenwin Jones, to me, looks like a fish out of water. I actually think if he plays, it's good for the Houston Dynamo because he's not mobile. He stands in the middle, he kills space. And he just doesn't seem to fit in with the Almirones, the Villalbas, the Assads, these young South American players that are all about movement, mobility, and technique.
He's definitely a 100% different style to these guys. But, you know, with no Joseph Martinez, with him being injured, now we don't know if we're going to see him this weekend or not. But, you know, they don't really have anyone to fall back on. So, I mean, this is a guy who, for as good as Adolfo Machado and Leonardo are at clearing crosses and handling set pieces, this is a guy that's going to give them everything they can handle as far as him attacking the ball and being difficult to mark in the box on crosses and set pieces.
Eddie Robinson joining us here ahead of the Atlanta-Houston game this weekend. You can catch that game on theCUBE. We'll have the call for that. I think our pregame is what, Eddie? Is it 6 o'clock?
5:30.
5:30 pregame. Okay. Yep. 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock on theCUBE. Let's talk a little bit more about Atlanta United, because this team came into this league in a very big way, spending all kinds of money, $60 million on their training facility, millions upon millions on players. Their coach is Tata Martino, who, quite frankly, is probably the most decorated coach outside of Carlos Alberto Pereira way back in the day at the Metro Stars, who won the World Cup with Brazil. This is the most decorated coach outside of him in the history of the league. Coach Barcelona, coached Argentina, and he's taken that same style of play despite the fact that he hasn't had the Messis and that quality of player, and he's really instituted it into Atlanta United. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is, as long as he's got the right players, you know. I mean, every system can be flawed if you don't have the players for it, and we've seen, you know, that with such a hot start they had, then they lose their leading goal scorer in Joseph Martinez. I mean, the guy was on absolute fire. And I think something that we're going to see as the season goes on, you just see sometimes the inexplainable nature of Major League Soccer results, the way teams play from night to night, how he manages those issues, the kind of inconsistencies in his team's play in certain players, how he manages egos, especially in times where they might be struggling to get results, to get points. Listen, all of his skills are going to be tested for sure. I mean, the guy's got an unbelievable resume, but, you know, this is, as we've seen with all kinds of foreign coaches from Europe, South America, they get tested. This is something different. This is one of the most difficult jobs that any of them take on. So,
all right, switch gears to the Dynamo. 6-0-1 at home. Stated it early. They said they wanted a better home record. They've done that. On the road, they're 0-4. They have not looked good except the first half in Portland, which is the last time they have scored on the road. You know, are we looking for inspiration from somewhere else? Is it somebody different that's going to inspire the Dynamo on the road? This whole road mentality thing and not being able to carry over the spirit and the desire at home onto the road is really pretty baffling, and I don't think anybody can really put their finger on it right now.
It is, and this is that kind of unpredictability I was just talking about, where, you know, at the beginning of the season, I think the Dynamo players, I think Wilmer Cabrera, they were dead set. This is how we're going to play. This is who we are. I think after the second half of that Portland game, I think it ruffled their feathers a little bit more than maybe it should have. I think they went and tried to do a little too much in games on the road. I think that made them become a little bit timid. I would love to hear Wilmer Cabrera tell these players, guys, just go have fun. Forget it. Right? Back four, stay home. Juan David, stay home. Alex, get forward. Roam around. Have fun. Ramel, roam around. Have fun. Eric, combine with each other. Just get having fun. I think they're scared that they're going to get hammered again, you know, in a half. And
yeah, but do you not think that might have – maybe some of the hesitancy is this. So they went with their real system in Portland, like you aptly mentioned. In the second half, they couldn't get out of their own half of the field. So right after that in Toronto in New England, they switched to a 4-4-2. That didn't work out very well. Then they go to Toronto. They played with Cabezas as a third center back. That didn't work out well. And then they went back in Philadelphia to the 4-3-3. I think that's the place to stay, is at the 4-3-3. But if the Dynamo are being pegged as a team that can't break down deep defending teams, then it doubly makes important that they have to get the game's first goal on the road. That to me, I think, is a big piece of them getting their first road points, is getting the game's first goal on the road.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, how many times have we seen within the first 5 minutes of a game at BBVA Compass, the Dynamo are dropping balls into the channels for guys to run onto, and they're creating corner kicks. They're getting set pieces. They're already challenging their opponent's goal, right? But we don't see that on the road. I think that's where that mentality, straight out of the locker room. You can't come out sluggish and wait till you play yourself into the game. get right on top of them. Punch them right in the mouth from the first whistle and see if you can't steal something early, because like you just mentioned, that will open the game up and give them more opportunity to be themselves and to use that counterattack.
I'll tell you what, Eddie, I was impressed with Atlanta United without Yosef Martinez in Portland, because they absolutely defanged Portland in that 1-1 draw last weekend through ball possession.
Oh, yeah.
They took Valeri out of the game through ball possession. That was a pretty impressive step forward, I think, for them collectively as a team. So we'll see. This is going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to calling it with you, and thank you, as always, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Glenn. I'll see you tomorrow, buddy.
All right. He's the one and only Eddie Robinson, and guess what? His former teammate, Ricardo Clark, will get his 300th start if he does start this game. At 34 years of age, he'd only become the 14th player in Major League Soccer to do that. What an achievement that is. A moment now for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-HURT, 713-322-4878. So it doesn't matter if your accident is, it could be a car accident, boat, motorcycle, we hope not, but it happens. Industrial, construction, plant, refinery, or 18-wheeler. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are going to treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com. The Daspit Law Firm will work for you 24-7. They're going to fight for your right for compensation. Do it with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. We'll take a break here. Best in Soccer Talk, self-proclaimed.
ESPN. 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, soccer fans, as I welcome you back here to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, don't forget, the real soccer pub in Edo is the King's Court right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins. It's on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. There are 13 TVs at the King's Court. They show Premier League matches, Dynamo matches, La Liga, Champions League, and NFL Sunday Ticket. King's Court has 24 taps, a full bar, plus wonderful pub food. And the other cool thing at King's Court is you can go hang out pre and post game with the Dynamo supporters group El Batallón. They got a rooftop deck and patio. King's Court TX. com, and go down there, say hello to our good friend Jay, who is certainly a guy that you're going to want to check in if you go down there. All right, right now joining us from Atlanta to get the take on Atlanta United, senior correspondent for Soccer Down Here Daily in Atlanta. He's John Nelson. John joins us now. John, thank you very much for taking the time out to join us.
Anytime, my friend, and to break the fourth wall right off the top of the interview, I know that you talk Prem. As a member of the Swansea Trust, myself, I have broken out my travel house white Swansea kit to prepare myself for this interview.
I appreciate that. And I'm sure you got a little Atlanta United garb around as well. All right. So just touch a little bit on how exciting just this whole start of Atlanta United after the big buildup, all the money that's been put into this team, a big manager in Tata Martino, wonderful young talent from South America, and then how this is connected with Atlanta, because obviously Bobby Dowd is going to be sold out again.
Four straight sellouts, and we were trying to do the math, and I had to take off my shoes and actually work with a calculator for this one. I think it's 190,000 people, once the Dynamo come into Bobby Dodd this weekend, will have sat down for the first four Atlanta United matches. And the best way that I can pretty much describe the whole vibe, think of what college football Saturdays are in the Southwest and in the SEC. That's the kind of vibe that you're getting when it comes to the approach of Atlanta United. You have tailgating, all the supporters groups are in and around the Georgia Tech campus. You have people getting as close as they can in their parking spaces hours ahead of time. It's a very collegial, very communal, very excited activity, and it's almost the place to be so far in the summer. And the one quote that Darren Eales had kind of mentioned throughout this entire growth is that he had always thought that Atlanta was a soccer city. And for those who didn't think or know that Atlanta would react this way, he always responded back with one word, crackers. He thought folks were crackers for thinking Atlanta was not a soccer town, and you're seeing it in these first four matches and all of the build up, and everybody can't wait to get into the bins later on in September.
So crackers, for those of you who don't know sort of the English, that means you're nuts. basically. So how much of this is novelty, though? Honestly, how much do you think of this as novelty and maybe first time entree into the sport of soccer? And then how do we keep those people?
Well, I think that there is a certain degree of it being the new toy in the toy chest. You know, it's like Christmas morning and you rip off the paper and there's the fire truck or there's the Nintendo or whatever your favorite Christmas morning gift was, you know, when you're growing up or even as a big kid, as a lot of us are these days. When you have over 30,000 season tickets, I don't think that in this first year you can go wrong. I think that they're just behind Seattle in that number.
Unbelievable.
And honestly, when you assemble a squad, and everyone's kind of looking at what Tata and Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales have done, it's almost MLS 3.0. And it's a very, I would say it's a very European way of assembling a side. You're spending money on young players, bringing them in, like the three designated players that you have in Joseph Martinez, Tito Villalba, and Miguel Almiron. And in a couple of years, if they play the way that they anticipate, then they will go. And so the attachment kind of have to be in a couple of years, maybe a 3 or 4 year span, then they bring in younger players, and it's a whole cycle that comes through. I think really that winning will obviously keep folks around. I think that probably the first season, maybe the first two, you'll get a pass, but I also think that in the Eastern Conference, the way that Martino has assembled this side, that they will be competitive. They're going to be hanging around the red line most of the year, but having, I think, 8 of your last 10 at home is going to be big to get them above the red line and into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a great point about the scheduling, because Atlanta United, as we had mentioned to our listeners earlier, they played 7 out of 10 away from home, so this is a big deal, them coming home. Does the crowd get into the fact, like, are you guys into the fact that you've got a distinctive purpose of play through guys like Almiron, Villalba, Yamil Assad, all these young guys that you've acquired, Martinez, who happens to be injured still? Do you guys sort of embrace that as well? That, hey, we got Tata Martino, and hey, he's coaching our team like he did Barcelona and Argentina. It's not the same suspects. But by the way, we play an entertaining type of soccer.
And this is the fun part, and I guess this is, you know, you get into the analytics of it all. The rosters has been assembled for situational matchups and situational games. It's almost a game-by-game analysis of how he can take the puzzle pieces, throw them into a starting XI, and have the guys on the bench that can fill in those holes. Early on in the year, and the way that I kind of break it down to the casual fan, you know, at the end of Major League, the movie, when Willie Mays Hayes gets on first base, and everybody in the
awesome.
Building, and you remember the scoreboard just saying, go, 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 and Willie Mays Hayes stole second.
Yeah,
that was the kind of offense that they had coming out of the blocks. It was Red Route 1, it was everybody forward, it is take advantage of a pass that goes astray just the tiniest bit, and it is all hell breaking loose and everybody going forward, and it's short opportunities. Very short time of possession, put the ball in the back of the net. But last week, going to Portland.
Yeah, this was sophisticated and this was mature, in my opinion. This was sophisticated and mature in Portland.
Yeah, and last week, it was something entirely different. It was control, creating from the back, possession, which is something that with, I guess, style A that we'll call it, it didn't matter. Time of possession, it was like, you know, running the spread offense like they did, you know, down at, up at Texas A&M or at Houston with Tom Herman before he went to, you know, elsewhere. It was four wide. It was everybody into the pattern and going forward. Last week in Portland, it was ball control. It was hand the ball off to the running backs. It was almost 3 yards in a cloud of dust, get the first down, move the sticks. Time of possession really hadn't been a statistic that folks had paid attention to until last week when it was 70-30. If you're into these kinds of things, and it was build up and taking your time and taking advantage of the opportunities, and something very subtle in the lineup last week in Portland. Julian Gressel was moved from the middle to the outside. Villalba was moved up top. And so if you look at the first goal, the goal that Atlanta United scored, you got a crisscross. Gressel overlapped, worked his way into the middle from the outside. Villalba and Almiron worked their way off to the edges. Everyone went with the ball. Gressel was left alone, left foot, one touch into the back of the net. So we've seen style A and style B. I think that still with Jacob Peterson, maybe another couple of weeks away, Martinez another week or so away, everybody's thinking maybe NYCFC, and Greg Garza closer, or probable, however you want to phrase it. I think Martina used the word probable. You're probably going to see style B against the Dynamo instead of style A, and I think that may frustrate the Dynamo when they come into Bobby Dodd.
Should be interesting because the Dynamo haven't answered the bell apart from all the way back in Portland, but what you described in Portland essentially defanged them. It took Diego Valeri out of the game. No, I don't think anybody's ever come into Portland and dominated and had the ball for that long of an amount of time, and we all know that ball possession stats are, you know, when you hear people throw them out there, you know, you kind of ask the question, well, where was it? Was it in their own half, in the middle third, the final third? Did it lead to creating chances? It can be deceptive. This was not deceptive. These were great analytics, and this might even be termed road tactics in a way. I don't think there's any question. Well, listen, John, this is great insight. I'd love to have you on again. Maybe we'll even do it after the game. We appreciate you coming on today, and great stuff talking about Atlanta United. We're looking forward to this one, as I know you are as well.
Anytime, my friend. You know the numbers.
All right. That's John Nelson, Atlanta, senior correspondent for Soccer Down Here Daily. We appreciate him coming on the show. Quick reminder here that as host of Soccer Matters, nothing goes better together than great friends and Bud Light. Spring is here. Get out on a patio, post up at a pool, or come out to a Dynamo game. More importantly, grab your friends in an ice-cold bucket of Bud Lights, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, or any other day of the week. Remember, it's not about the parties. It's about the friends you made along the way. Bud Light, official beer of the Houston Dynamo and sponsor of Soccer Matters Wednesdays, even though tonight we're on Friday, because tonight on Friday, this is our special edition based on the fact that Dynamo played on Wednesday. As we go to break here, I've got a pair of tickets to the Heineken Champions League final party. It's at the Warehouse Live Saturday, June 3rd. Steve Nicol, the Liverpool legend, is going to be attending this, who played in, they were called European Cups at the time, two European Cup finals. It's now the Champions League. So I've got two tickets for the fifth caller right now to the Heineken's Champions League final party here in Houston at Warehouse Live.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, soccer fans, don't forget, the real soccer pub in Edo is the King's Court right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. Now, they've got 13 TVs there at the King's Court. They show it all. Premier League, Champions League, MLS, La Liga, you name it, they have it. They have 24 taps, a full bar, an extensive selection of spirits, plus tremendous pub food there. Get over to King's Court. It's a great place to go pre-Dynamo and post-Dynamo matches. They've got the rooftop deck, El Bateon parties in there, and they got a great patio that sits in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Say hello to Jay at King's Court, kingscourttexas.com. Now, upcoming here in Houston on June 3rd, as we all know, it's the Champions League final between Real Madrid and Juventus. There's a wonderful party going to go on downtown called the Heineken's Champions League Final Party. Brian Ching is going to be there, a number of notables down there. But there's going to be one guy in there that has done a few things that nobody has done in there, and that is win the European Cup, which is now called the Champions League. This is a party on June 3rd. His name, well, he's the former Liverpool legend, Steve Nicol, and he joins us now. Steve, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, Glenn.
You know, I go around town in Houston, and you know what I tell people? I say, hey, I called a Liverpool game with Steve Nicol. Gets me in the door anywhere, gets me instant respect.
Good man. Hey, if it gets you a pint as well, then I'm all for that.
Well, let's, because we got a lot of Liverpool fans here in Houston. We have a big supporters group here. Let's first get kind of a synopsis on the season under Jurgen Klopp this year with Liverpool.
I think initially, first half of the season, they actually duped us all into thinking they actually may have a chance of winning the Premier League. The form was that good. They had as tough a start as anybody in the Championship. One that we all thought, certainly Liverpool fans thought, you know, it's sink or swim. If we start horrible, then it could be a long season. But, of course, as we know now, Liverpool are absolutely on fire. Steamrolling anybody and everybody, particularly the top clubs. And as I said earlier, they kind of duped us into thinking that maybe there was a chance we could win the title. But from Christmas on, we've kind of leveled off to somewhere that we didn't want to be, and find ourselves scrambling now with one game to go, albeit should be an easy one against Middlesbrough to get in the top four.
Steve Nicol joining us here, played in two European Cup finals, winning it in 1984. They beat Roma in the Olympic Stadium, 70,000. We're going to get to that in a minute, but right now we're talking Liverpool. What do you think Liverpool's manager, Jurgen Klopp, sort of has learned here now since his time in the Premier League, and maybe some differences between that and the Bundesliga?
To be honest, I actually read an article that kind of he summed up what he had learned, which I kind of think he's right. You know, he was taken aback at the intensity week in and week out of every single game in the Premier League. There is no easy games, regardless of who you're playing against, whether it's the top team, whether it's the bottom team. Nobody gives less than 100%. Obviously, the amount of games. And so all of these things really fatigue your players, both physically and mentally. And I'm sure he realises now that he didn't have a squad big enough with enough quality to cope with that, which is probably part of the reason why, you know, the second part of the season, Liverpool have struggled going to lesser clubs, because that's when you need to be able to show how good you are, and you need to be mentally in tip-top shape to go to a place the likes of Stoke, where, you know, historically, it's always a tough place to go and play and enjoy yourself. You know, the best teams do that, regardless of where they are, and Liverpool struggled to do that. But again, I think a lot of it was down to the length of the Premier League season, how physically and mentally draining it is, and I think he will be prepared, and I think we'll see how prepared he is by what he does in the summer.
Steve Nicol joining us, the former Liverpool legend, also a great manager in Major League Soccer with the New England Revolution. I remember the day you and I called that game out of a studio. It was a preseason game. It was Milan and Liverpool, and I think one of our talking points was, did Liverpool buy enough? And obviously, I think that's some type of question that's really never left and continues to hang over them. What are their biggest needs? Is it still a left back? What is their biggest needs?
For me, I think they need a proper centre forward. I think they need a recognised centre forward, a guy who's been there, done it, who will just play centre forward. You know, Klopp seems to like three forwards who will intermingle, who sometimes will be wide, sometimes will be in the middle. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think if you look at Lewandowski when he was at Dortmund, the fact that he had a real centre forward, he was one of the main reasons that Dortmund did so well. So I'm kind of a little surprised that he didn't go along that route. At the same time, he didn't really have a recognised centre forward. You know, Daniel Sturridge, who I would say is the only one he had, was never fit. So maybe he didn't have a lot of choice. He had to play three guys that sort of interchange with each other. So definitely a centre forward, definitely a centre forward that scores goals. But the truth is, right up the spine of the team needs a real injection. We need a goalkeeper we can trust. As good as Mignolet's been probably the last dozen games, we can't really trust him. I think we need a centre forward we can trust. You know, Lovren signed a new deal. He's a guy you just can't trust. You don't know what you're going to get. And I think in the middle of the park, we have horses. You know, we have good horses. Chan's a good player. You know what you're getting. Henderson's a good player. You know what you're getting, but we need somebody a little better than that. We need a real figure in there. So you're looking at the spine of the team, to be quite honest.
Steve, speaking of the spine of the team, I noticed last week against Stoke, they went into a five-man midfield and played with three backs. Tell me a little bit about why you think he did that. Is that essentially just kind of answering your question, just to add more players in midfield and add to the quality in that area of the field?
I always think a 3-5-2 is a lot more attacking, to be honest. And it's a gutsy move to go there and attack. So I guess if you're a team that defensively is not your forte, then why not go and attack? I would hope that's the reason he did it. It certainly worked, but again, I'm not sure that the personnel is there to play that three consistently in the Premier League. If he can find a couple of good defenders that he could rely on, that we could all rely on, that we all know what we're getting, who just don't make crazy mistakes from nowhere, then yes, you can play three. That gives you more men going forward for me. So it'll be interesting to see what he does at the weekend against Middlesbrough.
Steve Nichol joining us here. You see him on ESPN FC with all our great friends up there, Craig Burley and Alejandro Moreno and others. You know, you're seeing these giant numbers that they're saying they're going to splash out money-wise in the transfer window. You believe in it?
Not really. I mean, there was reports yesterday that they offered $75 million for Mbappe. $75 million is never going to get Mbappe for a start. but I guess if you're a supporter, it's good that they're talking those numbers. I'm a little surprised. I don't believe Liverpool are going to go out and spend that kind of money on a player. Mbappe is a real one-off. You know, he's a guy that maybe, if Liverpool think he's worth 75 now, they're probably thinking 2 or 3 years down the line it's going to be 120, 30. But I think teams are going to pay that already. So I'm not sure if you're a Liverpool fan, you think that they're going to go out and buy 3 or 4 players at that amount of money. I'm actually surprised they offered that kind of money for a player. I don't think they're fishing in that pond at all. I think they're fishing in the same pond as how Coutinho came to Liverpool, how Mane came, how Lallana came. You know, you're talking 30, 35 million. Try and bring these guys on and then maybe down the line sell them for double the money. So I think that's where Liverpool are fishing at the moment.
Steve, have we lost some of the authenticity in the game? In other words, I'm listening to you talk about this money for Mbappe, right? And I'm thinking about you back when you played, and I'm going, well, they weren't making that kind of money. Do you think it's a totally different world now, and is it a bit mind-boggling to you? And have we lost some of the authenticity of the players like the Steve Nichols and the Graham Soonises and the Kenny Dalglishes?
I think there's no question. There's a different it's a different attitude towards things nowadays. The biggest one being everything has to be instant. You know, nobody anymore gets an opportunity to gain experience and to learn by playing. You know, particularly in the Premier League, it's all about the here and now. And your players, I don't think they have the same hunger that players used to have. There's no question that money softens players up, and when you get a lot of it too early, I think it takes the edge off you. So, yeah, it's a completely different game. But I think more importantly, the way the game's played now, I don't think is as exciting as it was. I was at Anfield for the opening of the new stand, the game against Leicester, and before that, it had been a while since I'd been, and people were talking to me about how, you know, there's not such a great atmosphere for the whole game, and I was trying to figure it out. Well, I figured it out because too many times, not just Liverpool, but other teams, they make their way up to the edge of the opposition penalty box, and the ball finishes back at the halfway line. Now, you can't expect your fans to get excited about playing a pass from the edge of the opposition box back to the halfway line. I don't care how drunk you are. You're still not going to find that fun. So, yeah, there's definitely been huge changes in the game, both on and off the field.
Should you know, you're a commentator now. You're what they call it in England, a pundit. You're someone whose opinion is very valued based on your experiences and all your expertise. Should fans be disappointed? Let's put this to MLS here. Should fans be disappointed when teams are sitting back at home in Major League Soccer? I think so, because I've totally shifted now to I want to be entertained. And I don't think anybody wants to come to a game in the summer with a team sitting on their 18-yard box.
No, that's not why we all started playing the game. It's not why we watch the game. No question, it's harder to make chances and score goals. But my goodness, you know, you should only be you should only sit in the top of your box and defend. And if you're playing against a team that is clearly a mile ahead of you, then, you know, it's a professional game. You have to do what you have to do. But MLS, there's so much parity in MLS that there shouldn't be any team at all, particularly at home, thinking about sitting on the edge of the box. It doesn't make sense. There is no reason to do it in MLS for sure. So I don't understand why teams do that.
Steve, last one on MLS, and then I'm going to switch it to the European Cup, and then we know you have work to do. So we're here in Houston, right? And they've kind of revamped it. I know you've seen the Dynamo and the changes under Wilmer Cabrera. They're 6-0-1 at home. They intended to get a better home record here this year, but they've had monumental struggles on the road. They've never been able to, apart from one half in Portland, really come out of the locker room looking alive and carrying over that effervescence and energy and cavalier spirit that they have at home onto the road. Now, you having been a guy that was so successful as a manager in MLS, why is the road so difficult in this league? I know it's difficult everywhere, but why is it so difficult in this league for the Dynamo to recapture that home spirit and take it on the road?
I don't think there's another league in the world that week to week you play in a completely different environment, whether it's the amount of fans, whether it's the type of field you play on, whether it's at altitude, you know, whether it's 50 degrees or 90 degrees. There are so many changes from game to game that players in MLS have to deal with that nobody else deals with. So, you know, if you add that to the obvious thing that every team and every league has, that going away from home is always hard, then you end up getting what you get in MLS. It really is unique, there's no question. And it's hard to explain to anybody unless you actually do it. You go from New England in March to California. I mean, it's like going from the Earth and landing on the moon as far as the weather's concerned. So, I mean, nobody else in the world deals with that.
All right, I'm going to switch you, Steve, to the 1984 European Cup. You guys go to the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and it's Roma's home stadium. You beat the Italians in penalty kicks. Just some of your thoughts on that day, and as you kind of look back now in your career at that moment, that significant moment that's a rarity for any player, what runs through your mind?
I think the first thing, obviously, is not being scared to go there. We had such a winning mentality that regardless of who we were playing or where we were playing them, we always felt we were better than everybody. We always felt that even on a bad day, we had players that could win the game for us, and on a good day, we'd smash anybody. You had the atmosphere, the caveat of actually going to their home and upsetting them. And then when you step out just before the game and you're away from home and there's, 35,000 of your fans there? I mean, it's an incredible sight and an incredible noise. Obviously winning, you know, we win dramatically on penalties. You know, for me, it's kind of up and down. I came on in the game with half an hour to go. I had an opportunity to score, didn't take it. We go into extra time, we go to penalties. I miss the first penalty, and we end up winning. If there was ever a game summed up what goes through or what happens to a player in football, that was it. You know, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, and it's how you cope with it. And as I said, the biggest thing is for us to have that mentality. Can you imagine today a team going to Juventus to win the Champions League final at Juventus, them being at home? I mean, it seems unthinkable that any team could do that even today. So the fact is we did it. But the reason we did it is because of the mentality we had and obviously the quality.
And then a year later, you get to the final again, and this is a totally different part of your career. And I know you've talked about this with me, and this was a game that prior to the game in Brussels, Belgium at the Heysel Stadium, I think it was 39 people were killed. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on before the game. It was horrible. Juventus would ultimately win the game 1-0, but I think I remember you telling me in a prior interview we did that you hardly, I mean, you couldn't focus on the game, obviously.
No, nobody could. Nobody did. You know, we it's funny, we had Dortmund against Monaco recently, and you know, there was a lot of complaints that, you know, the Dortmund players were made to play the game the day after somebody planted a bomb at the beside their boss. Well, we had to play a game 3 hours after 39 people died at Heysel, and so you can imagine there was no atmosphere. It was a case of get this game over with. Under no circumstances were we going to win the game or could we win the game. And quite frankly, we didn't care. All we wanted to do was get back, make sure our family and our wives at the game were okay and get home. So it was a complete non-event. And the goal that we lost kind of summed up the whole thing. It was a penalty was given, a so-called foul, maybe 5 yards outside the box. And nobody complained. We certainly didn't complain. We knew that we just weren't going to win under any circumstances. And to be fair, the Juventus players were exactly in the same boat as us. They just wanted to get home and get away. And so that's kind of what happened.
Steve, did you know your family was okay? I mean, did you, when you guys went on the field, were you guys able to make contact with family members?
We knew that basically it was our wives, most of us. Mm-hmm. We knew that they were in the stand. We knew that they were under a lot of pressure from everybody around them, because all of a sudden anybody with red or from Liverpool was an obvious target. So it was a very scary period. And as I said, the only thing we wanted to do was make sure everybody was okay, get them on the bus, and let's get away and get home.
Well, Steve, thank you for going into that. I'm sure that's not fun to dredge that one up, but it is a part of history. And, talk about two very differing European Cup finals for you. Just a word on the Real Madrid and Juventus before I let you go, and how you see this one playing out. And obviously it's a great matchup between a great Spanish team and an Italian team.
Yeah, up until probably the semi-final, I pretty much had Real Madrid as favourites. But then, having watched Barcelona, you know, demolishing Barcelona, and then giving Monaco as good an attacking side as there is in world football right now, giving them not even a kick, I think Juventus are favourites. I don't think there's another team that are as good from back, middle to front as they are. You know, you can argue that Real Madrid going forward are pretty special with the likes of Ronaldo. You know, whether Bale's going to be fit, we don't know. But they've got a lot of match winners. No question, Real Madrid defensively can be got at. And I think that changes, and that's why I have Juventus as favourites, because defensively they're outstanding. They are the best defensive team in the world, no question. And they have the capability going forward to hurt you badly. Little Dybala is fantastic. Higuain, you know, Mandzukic, who's a centre forward, has been playing on a wide left role, not only defender but getting forward and scoring goals. So I just think Juventus, from back, middle to front, they're flawed. I don't think they really have an Achilles heel. But Real Madrid, I think their Achilles heel is defensively, and that's why I think Juventus are favourites going into it.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for, number one, all your time here. Great insight on everything. I also want to thank you. We're looking forward to seeing you come down to Houston here on June 3rd for the event. But until then, thanks again. And as we get closer to the match, maybe we'll get you in and we'll break it down even more.
No bother. Thanks, man.
All right. He's the best. He's Steve Nichol, and we appreciate him coming on. What a career he had. By the way, won a few first division titles in England with Liverpool too, but we'll talk a little bit more about that. Heineken Champions League final party. It's at the Warehouse Live, 813 St. Emmanuel Street, put together by Brian Ching, Saturday, June 3rd, 2017. And we've got a pair of tickets right now, again, to the Heineken's Champions League final in Houston at the Warehouse Live, June 3rd. Fifth caller right now gets a pair of tickets. That'll wrap it up for tonight. Before we go, you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, and the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. By the way, that's where the Liverpool supporters hang out. So that's why we're tagging it on the back of Steve's interview. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. Catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop in for a pint and a bite. They've also got a great whiskey offering over there. Say hello to Peter. Open field, lots of monitors, outdoor patio, the Gorgeous Gale, the place to be, thegorgeousgale.com. That does it for tonight. For all of you, for Jose, who produced tonight in the absence of the one and only Tyler Scott, podcastarena.com and iTunes is where you get the podcast of this show. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Good night.
ESPN 97.5.